Call the Crystal City Council work session to order at this time. So the purpose of this work session is to discuss the following agenda item: City Council Long Range Vision and Strategic Planning. So I assume most of you got a text to kind of been thinking about tonight and kind of had some things that he wanted to. Has to think about for one to take away.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. So one of the things that we've been talking about is, Crystal has its mission, it has its priorities. So one of the things I was actually going to ask the council members who've been in the council for a while give some input on when they share what the priorities mean to them, what they mean. One of the things that staff would like to do is do more, kind of long-term strategic planning internally, but also at some point, I think it would be beneficial for the city to do a more formal strategic plan. Where does the city want to be in 5 years, 10 years? Long-term, what do we want Crystal to be? And Anne had been here 21 years as manager. Obviously, multiple councils have gone through, and staff, I'm being the new manager. I don't have all that background, but also every 2 years, potentially having, there's council turnover, staff turnover. We just hired, Mark had been here almost 8 years. We just finally hired the public works director. And so I just think it's a really kind of prime time to have the current council, which I think things are going great, to kind of articulate what their vision is for the city. And so to do that, I asked some specific questions, and then I also added tonight, I printed off just a couple of examples of, I looked at a lot of them, but there's some that are all over the place. But I have three examples of kind of the city's missions and visions and kind of their values. I have New Hope, Minnetonka, and Wayzata. Obviously, we're probably closest to New Hope as far as city, but both Wayzata and New Hope have done a really good job, and they've done some recent formal strategic planning. So I just print those out, examples of kind of what some other cities, the way that they're thinking about the long term. So kind of with that, and I was going to take some notes here on the board. So I thought we'd go through and talk about what your vision is. And then as a council, you'll have to kind of come to a consensus on where do we want to go from here. If the council just wants to, I've had kind of this conversation with a couple people, staff just keep the lights on and just continue down the path. That is one option. But again, being new, I want to make sure that the council and I are aligned. It's me being also staff. And what does that mean by keeping the course as is? Is there anywhere we want to, add or subtract or, go change the tack a little bit? So that's really the goal and the purpose of this meeting. And we can talk about other, bigger things later. If we want to do actually any more retreats like this or conversations, it's a constant work in progress. And it's something that every few years, the council should have this conversation and make sure that as a city, we're still on the track that council decision makers, which in turn, the representatives of the community ought to be. So with that, I guess the first thing that so I also put in the email that I sent out, the we don't have a formal vision statement. And while it's not required, I did include the mission, and it's a pretty standard mission for a lot of cities. I don't know how what the experience of the council individually and their practices have been professionally. If you've gone through a lot of mission and vision statements, it can get way into the weeds, and you can spend months wordsmithing things. I don't think we need to do that. This is really more just a high level, first level, first. We have our mission. I don't really think we need to change it. But using that mission, using our priorities that council has adopted, what do those mean? And start feeling that out, fleshing that out, and then go from there. So I guess the first one that I would, if there's any initial comments, I'm actually going to get up at the board and just, we can go around, maybe the more senior members could start, because they'll have the background of how we got to where we're at now, like what that has meant. That sounds okay, council. It is really supposed to be a conversation.
It's not great.
Follows.
It's a test.
So,
there is a right answer.
But this is really for the council to talk and me to listen as the head, chief administrative officer, to make sure that I understand what the council wants long term. Any initial questions on that? Or,
all right,
Mayor, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Let's start with thriving business community. I think that one really was born out of trying not to be, as a city, obstructing new businesses from being formed or to develop within our community. Sometimes our own rules make it very cumbersome for them to get in place, but we put these rules in for a reason. A lot of it tends to be like zoning and that sort of thing, and that's where it is. In my experience as a business, when I've met cities, municipalities, it was, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that. Rather than having a conversation, my question was always, how can we? And we talked a lot about how can we help people get into business if what they're asking isn't the right question, you know, help guide them to the right question and tell them how they could do it if there's an alternative way. So a lot of that goes with attitude towards our customers, so to speak. Our customers being businesses that come in and want to get a permit, wanting whatever it happens to be. And what came out of that in was kind of the plain language thing. That was both citizen driven and business driven. But the community outreach task force kind of made an effort to go through all of our ordinances, try to institute plain language, try to make it understandable. Oftentimes, when we look at an ordinance or something, there would be we'd see a lot of state references or actually printed out in our ordinances, the actual ordinance itself, which wasn't really friendly to understand because it felt more like legalese. So we went through, we had a group of, I think it was about 14 people who read all of our ordinances and changed a lot of things to be more consistent. We did more referencing of state law as opposed to reiterating it, and just trying to make it more simple to understand. So that was a big piece there. We had our own layer of licensing, which were kind of was a duplication as to what the state was doing. So, for example, we'd have a plumber come in who's state licensed, and then we would put in our plumbing license on top, or whatever it might be, garbage licensing, a whole bunch of different things. And it really kind of hit in the trades, where the trades were having to come in and double license. And they do that obviously in Minneapolis and in St. Paul, but we didn't want to have that barrier in Crystal. And so those things started changing. One of the most, I would say, noticeable changes has been a change in the staff and their approach. And, you know, I touched on a little bit earlier on having that attitude of helpfulness. And we started seeing some of our employees actually go out to the businesses, introduce themselves, or when there was a problem, say, hey, can I meet you at your business, that sort of thing. And all those things started taking place, and I think they still happen today. So that's part of it. We don't have a chamber of commerce. We don't have anything like that in Crystal anymore. That seemed to die. I don't know if that's something that it didn't feel vibrant when it was here. I don't know if there's a different way to do it. But there are other chambers, Minneapolis Chamber. There's different places where people can go up there, look at that type of organization. I'm not opposed to having something here. However, it's not something that I'm really stuck on because there are other organizations that aren't functioning. And they've been showing up at our ribbon cutting sort of thing. It's kind of tough because you don't have a whole lot of businesses in Tristan. I mean, we're primarily a resident, but if we can do anything to help accommodate somebody's coming in, trying to repurpose location, getting conditional use, what have you, that can be kind of a daunting phase for someone who's never experienced that. And so really, I think it's having staff meet them where they're at and help them accomplish what they need to do. So that's my initial thought I have right now. John, do you got anything?
Sure. I'll say cooperation and teamwork. I think that we've had some periods within our, not only with the council, but council and staff, staff and the constituents, where we have had some pretty rough patches and we've, thrived to work better with each other and, cooperate in terms of, our goals. Probably the one example I can think of is like, for the longest time, we had the only aerial in the area. And so every night it was being called out to other cities, and I think that, mutual aid, it's finally the other cities starting to realize that, Crystal just couldn't handle that type of load or whatever. We were getting kind of cranky about it, So it made a strong effort to suggest that they might want to look at getting their own aerial as well. And, because we weren't able to cover all the calls, period. So, and then I also think within the council itself, we had some periods where we went through some tough times. We actually had to have someone come in and kind of like do some
moderating.
Yeah. There's
Mediation
is probably moderation and mediation. Yeah. We did that. And, but I think, we went through some tough times and then not only with, among ourselves, but also us and staff I didn't have a very good relationship with Mark's predecessor. I just thought that he was an engineer, he didn't have, he was either full on or full off, it was a tough time. So, but that's what I have.
Is there any, I guess I'm not looking for differences, but I'm trying to refine the perspectives. As far as what Jim had talked about, I mean, some of it, what you said, along the same lines, have you seen that approach, obviously the attitude of trying to be working with the business owners to try to achieve what they're looking for, have you seen that?
I think it's made a difference. Yeah, I think so. So, and again, I think I mentioned that there's turnover in staff. In the turnover in staff and look for individuals who were probably had better skill set, in terms of dealing with the public and also dealing with the council. So, I think also, with the, elections bring on change, right? So, we have, instead of having this attitude of, this is how we used to, this is how we do it, right? We are, looking for new ways of approaching new problems and trying to find, we take into account everybody's opinion rather than just one opinion, I guess. So that's helpful.
I'd like to make a comment. I address you guys by first name. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to anybody. That was kind of born out of the dysfunction we had in the earlier days, in my earlier days, to really approach somebody where they're at and meet them there and just become a little bit more friendly, more personal with them. That's my goal there. I've heard some people have said that that's disrespectful. That is certainly not my intent. It's quite the opposite, actually. If you want me to work on changing that, let me know, and I will, on an individual basis. Otherwise, I'm going to continue what I'm doing. I hope you receive that.
This is the other most senior member.
I guess I'm one of the oldest people here, too. But I'm not sure if this is the appropriate place to bring this up. But I don't know if you guys saw that article on the front page of the Strib Monday or Tuesday this week about other cities and their community centers are aging and whether or not there's the city is going to spend money to fix them. And I certainly am always conscious, you know, my saying is, well, you know, at the end of the day, we're spending other people's money and we need to keep that in mind. But it just, when I read that, it just made me so glad that we're here at Christopher also have a vision on the future. For example, we're going to fix the pool and not just fix the pool. We're going to make the pool better and providing those kind of services. I mean, I don't think I want to live in a city where the taxes are so minimal that that's all they get done is plowing the streets. Because I think to me, as a council and as a city, we can do better than that. And so I don't know if that's, it just made me happy when I read that we seem to be in a really good place, you know, a nice balance of not overspending, but not cutting things so much that we don't provide anything for our residents. So.
So kind of like a balanced quality of services.
A balance. I mean, keeping the bottom line is how much we're spending, but on the other hand, we're doing a lot to make this a nice community. And after reading the article, it just felt cool about that. So I don't know if anybody else had that same connection.
As it relates to business, we had some conditional use permits come through. And in the early days, we had just a whole list of conditions that got tacked on. And as we were looking at the conditions, you know, they became fairly arbitrary, and some of them weren't necessary. And some of them were, I would say, downright insulting. So there was a push at one point in time to trust that people are going to do the right thing, or don't assume they're going to do the wrong thing. And there's a difference between informing someone and just throwing it into a conditional use permit. If there's a legitimate, legal, and serious thing that needs to be put into consideration, yes, we'll get that in. But assuming that someone's going to disrespect another person in writing that as a condition, no bueno. So we went through a period of time where we started making a pretty big deal about, you know, hey, is this really necessary? And, you know, there's a consciousness that we have to be aware of as a council and as a city, that most people aren't going to fight us if we're going to say something, if they're asking for a licensure or they're looking for a conditional use permit. They're just going to say yes, yes, or yes, or yes, or all the way, or yes, ma'am, however it is. And we have to be careful that we're specifically addressing the things we're supposed to. Because if we start doing more than what we're supposed to be doing, we're really not going to know about it. You know, we're not going to know that really put a strain on that particular business. Well, they didn't say anything. Well, no, of course they're not going to say anything. They're asking for something out of the ordinary. And kind of in the same line, there's been a couple occasions where that same concept of the all-powerful city and government, so to speak, has stepped into the marketplace and has gone into competition against other people. And it's kind of happening again with our roundabout. I'll try to tie it to the roundabout in a minute. But if the city goes into competition to buy a piece of property with an investor, the city's going to win because they're perceived to have unlimited funds, right? And we're supposed to be, when we're doing those things, if we got a legitimate reason and, you know, we're willing to go as far as to take the land in the future, that's one thing. But if it's dealing with trying to clean up blighted property and we're going into competition with the market, and there are legitimate marketplaces, that's not what we're there for. If the marketplace can handle it, we should be allowing the marketplace to handle it in that kind of competition. I don't believe is proper. Now, the roundabout, I've had a lot of heartburn about the roundabout, but that thing that we're doing, when we step into that arena and we say to that business, we're interested in buying this, and I don't know where the EPCO lines are. I thought I knew. They keep moving on me. You know, I'm just going round and round about it. But at what point do we destroy that market for that business? You know, because they know now that we're looking to buy it. And they may or may not know that we would be willing to take it. And at what point do they realize that they have no choice, per se? Because now they can't do what they had planned to do, that sort of thing. So that to me is a very challenging thing, and we have to be eyes wide open as to how we approach that. And I don't know what's business friendly there. I just, you know, it's community. We're trying to do what's right for the community, but we're also having a pretty strong effect on a business, and that's where I feel like maybe we're I don't know if we're in line with what that goal is or not.
But Jim, I mean, first of all, I don't know if we can really discuss what's going on there, but, you know, but obviously their business model is changing. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, and you know, big picture, you know, 50,000 foot level, I mean, you know, like in any opportunity, I mean, you never know unless you ask, right?
True that.
And so, I mean,
yeah.
You know, and I'm sure we're going to get to a point where we're going to be able to know more about it.
Yeah.
But clearly their business model is changing, and they're trying to make a determination of, you know, how are they going to move forward, right? And, you know,
I don't know the line is.
Right, exactly, yeah. You know, there's, I mean, our public works building sits on top of the old Knights of Columbus building, yeah. Right? So, and Knights of Columbus, obviously, their business or whatever, their viability has changed. It's not the same as what it was, you know, 30 years ago. And I know for a fact, like even with similar establishments like VFWs, for instance, even their business model is changing somewhat too. And they're trying to, you know, figure out, you know, how do they, you know, survive, you know, for the next generation. But we're probably getting off the beaten path here, but anyways, you know, I do think that, you know, everything that we get involved in terms of like looking at, you know, how we can make the city better. I think, you know, we're given a choice and some of those choices work out. Like I know when we looked at Minnesota Grinding as a place for the public works building, they told us the number of what it would take to buy their building. And we were like, okay, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And likewise, same thing with CenturyLink too. Like when we looked at buying that building, they were like going like pretty much every fiber optic line in the city goes through that building, right? So they're not they're in no position to move anywhere else, you know. And so, but we didn't know that until we, you know, actually went out there and asked, right? Yeah. And so, and I think that's part of, you know, part of being, you know, a leader in this community is like, you know, things won't change unless something happens. And the Sands apartment building, vacant lot for God knows how long, you know, and it was like the neighborhood dumping spot, you know. I've seen everything on that lot, you know, and now it's going to be something, it's going to become someone's home, right? It's going to become a good thing. And that's, as leaders in the community, hopefully we are, you know, looking in that direction, right?
And that sat for so long. I don't think that it's really parallel, but yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, we have to do those things. And that's when the market isn't doing what the market's supposed to be doing.
Right. I hear that. Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to jump. So.
No, but it's a, forgive, you know, you can't read them. Don't worry about it, because it's more for my brain storming under what you guys are saying. The finding that balance between, I mean, government, obviously we have a unique power, authority to, we don't have a, you know, bottomless piggy bank, but we have a lot more than a lot of private, you know, entities have, or at least access to it, and trying to find that public purpose, you know, that benefit, and not displace people, businesses, that's always going to be the challenge, trying to find that line of what, you know, how active should the EDA or the city be in, you know, controlling or directing development. I don't have an answer for that, because there isn't an answer. It's whatever the council feels comfortable with. And some of it is, you know, what's the public willing to accept? What is, you know, what is the business community willing to accept? No one's going to want to come in here if the city's taking left and right all these businesses. So it's, again, constantly working on trying to find that balance between the two. So that's something that, not just with that property, but with all of them going forward, is a constant challenge. It's one of the things that has to be weighed up. We haven't been that active lately. I know a full, you know, after the housing crisis, there were a lot of foreclosures, a lot of available properties, and the city was active, purchased a lot. We've gone sold through those, most of those. That was a different scenario, different time.
Different market.
Yeah, so.
Different market.
There's things we can control, and those are things we can't. I think as we go through, it's always prudent to take a measured approach for any of that.
I think one thing to remember when we're thinking about redevelopment is what do we have control of, and what do we want to take control of? You know, that's where the burden is. And, there are many communities who are very aggressive in taking over private property so that they can redevelop it. The problem is we're dealing with private property, and you don't have control of those places that we may or may not think something that needs to be redeveloped. So it is a continuous challenge, both in ideology, in planning, in dealing with the fact that we don't control the property. And we know the difficulties that could run with people on their property. I mean, just take a look at the blue line. We didn't have any control of any property where we were designing the lines. Mm-hmm. They can go up in the face. Yeah.
Does the council, and this is kind of more of a specific EDA area question, is there any, again, without committing that we're going to go buy a bunch of properties, is there a philosophical desire to do, when we talk about the potential work plan items, do more in any specific area, not necessarily want to acquire properties, but to, we have the, you know, the, when we talked about the wraps and the business grants, is that an area that again, it all depends on funding available, but is that an area that the council wants to do more types of either subsidies or kind of tangential financial things to help businesses who, for one reason or another, haven't or can't make improvements to the property? And maybe they just don't want to, you know, it's going to be property specific. But is that an area that the council wants to be more active in, or just let the market, or just keep what we're doing? I mean, that's kind of the three options. We were going to kind of continue what we're doing and adding, you know, where we can. That's the current trajectory. I guess that's what I'm asking is, there any desire now to do more than we've already talked about? Or is that be?
Well, I think the last time we had a meeting, I think I made my opinion pretty clear that I think that having business fronts that are attractive is something that I've heard from residents, and I think it shows in our survey results as well. I don't know how accurate those survey results are, because it's like not a ton of respondents, and it's also very self-selective. And it's also something that I personally noticed as well is, you know, our commercial districts are not as, they're more worn, they're more aged, they're not as well maintained as a number of our neighboring communities. And I think that does affect the perception of the city and the community, the perception of where you want to shop, the perception of people that visit if they want to possibly, you know, be here. I don't know if the grants is the right tool, but I do think that is a definite issue that I've heard. I mean, when you think about my election with Tony, we both had the same issue. Our commercial districts look like crap. That we both had that. I mean, it was something that we both agreed on. And so I think whatever we can do to improve that, like I said, I don't know if the facade grants are the best tool, but yeah,
it'd be nice if we had an alternative. And I don't know what that alternative is. I mean, we also know that undergrounding a lot of the telephone wires and the electrical wires is going to really clean up a lot of things, but we're talking about a whole bunch of money in that building. It's extremely expensive.
Do we have a long-term plan for any of that?
It was in the long-term plan that stretched.
Well, not the bearing, but I mean, just the beautification, essentially, just the business side of it, the commercial side of it, things that.
Not specifically, other than the facade grants. We do city aspects with like the planter boxes, you know, pretty smaller things. And some of this comes down to, is it the government's job, is it the city's job to help private businesses improve the aesthetic of their business? That's somewhat a philosophical, ideological question, but at what point does it get, I guess, bad enough to where the city feels it needs to? And it's more the historical, high-level question. I don't think we're necessarily there yet, but there are, as has been said, there are areas that look worn down. They, you know, and I don't know what the, because I don't have a specific suggestion. You know, John and I talked about it, and he's in agreement, but we can't just, okay, we're going to pay this business to fix up their property to make it look nicer.
But what about things that like we as a city could do, such as maybe walkways or not cobblestone, but kind of like different looks to the roads? Just things that we as a city could do as a long-term plan. So I know it's going to be expensive,
So yeah, that's the ideas that we've come up with in the past, and we've done that at Best Lake Road. I remember walking down that strip mall, and it was just, you know, trip hazards. The pavement wasn't even. It was like, yeah, this is bad. Mm-hmm. You know, when you actually walk it, you drive by it all the time, and you get a sense that it's not that good. But you get out of the car and you walk it. Oh yeah, it's horrible. And I think we have some of those in other locations. We pushed that one because we were trying to, you know, prepare for a station that was coming, prepare for what was happening at the park. So that became our focus. I don't see why we can't do that other places.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that that's part of what makes, you know, like when you go down to Golden Valley's shopping area, what makes that so attractive is what they've done to the public commons.
Right.
It is in a permanent way. I think that that could be almost a more effective way of doing things.
But that's doing our job. And it gets hairy on 42nd because it's a county.
Yeah, very narrow right of way.
Yeah.
So much volume.
Yeah.
It would be nice if there was, we could explore road calming on 42nd. If there was some way, because people drive, because people drive 50 miles an hour on 42nd. You know, and it's just, I don't know if there's a way to put like a median in that road or whatever and limit the amount of like, you know, left turns or something like that. I mean, I look at like for instance, Vicksburg and Plymouth used, especially from Highway 55 North was just as bad as what 42nd is. People were just racing down it, but they created like a new median and then they have like this. Like, I don't know, they had art, like these monoliths in the middle of the median. And I mean, it seems to make a difference. You know, I mean, you don't have the sense that, you know, cars are just, you know, jockeying around or whatever. They seem to be, it seems to be a little bit calmer through that area. I don't know if there's a little bend in the road or whatever. You know,
that's engineering a road to a slower speed.
Right.
Yeah, they engineered the heck out of it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And, you know,
and the same thing is, you know, also apparent on Winnetka, like you say, going into, you know, pretty much downtown Golden Valley. It seems like they've done some work on that road to make it less, you know, hectic, you know.
Yeah.
Although the buildings haven't changed much, you know, the frontscape of the buildings haven't, you know, are pretty much the same as what they were 20 years ago. You know, I mean, you know, it's, but there's definitely. I think, you know, we as a council, I mean, I realize it's a county road, but we as a council should try and get the county to try and do something that kind of like, you know, promotes this kind of like, you know, you could probably use the word safety, but I don't know, just kind of like this, kind of like, yeah, we live here, you know, type, you know, atmosphere. You know, because like,
well, we were like Newhall, because Newhall, it feels a little bit more like that, even though it's, you know, it is, I mean, part of it is, these roads were engineered at a time where it was like, is there turnoffs? Is there a lot of interaction?
Right.
From Douglas down to New Hope, you know, no, there's not a lot of interaction. So we could just, you know, just really have things go fast and straight.
Right.
But the unfortunate part of that is what it looks like now.
Right.
I do. There's also the challenge of people needing to get places, and I don't want to be North Minneapolis where they've taken 4 lanes to 3 lanes, 4 lanes to 2 lanes, and now you can't even get through North Minneapolis anymore based on the engineering, the reduction in lanes, all that kind of
stuff. Potholes.
There's an awful lot of things, and then it just becomes, okay, people are going to take different routes. That's what happened to Douglas when we went from 4 lanes to 3 lanes in Douglas. It used to be a lot busier because more people use it because it was more of a visible place to get from one place to another. Well, people just don't come to Douglas anymore because it's a slower thing. The place we really noticed it was when we had a snow event. There was a lot of people coming off Highway 100 and going to it, but you don't see that anymore. And I don't know if that's a plus or a minus in your mind. I don't know. I'm just looking at it as it's a capacity thing that has changed, and I see that capacity challenge happening all over the metro, and it's putting more pressure on our freeways. And if a freeway goes down, if there's no alternative, you can't bring all that traffic through a community anymore because we've designed it differently. And I think that's a huge challenge. For example, when they were going to do the light rail on 55, they were going to make that like a neighborhood road and bring it down to 30 miles an hour. Well, guess what? 394 goes down. If there's a semi that goes over turn, that's the only way. That's the only alternative. So I get it. I don't necessarily know if that's what we need to do. When we think about the system as a whole, it becomes more challenging in my mind to accomplish.
One thing is, I think as a, I feel it's kind of conflict in the position where it's, where, how much do we have to think about what's best for the city, and how much do we think about, you know, the people traveling through our city, but not actually stopping here, right? So I think about Douglas. I grew up on Douglas back when it was four lanes, right on it. It was, and I think that the transition has been great for the city, right? I mean, property values along Douglas have increased. I don't think you'd have that development that over by, I don't really know, you know, down on Douglas there, that used to be just fields, but now they're big, big houses.
Okay. The Gaulke Farm.
The Gaulke Farm. I can't imagine. I can't imagine those homes at those price points with a four lane, essentially highway there. I think that having roads that serve the community serves the community. But there is a cost, and the cost is, you know, when I go and visit my friends down in Golden Valley, it takes me an extra like 3 minutes to get down there. And I often find myself getting on 100 instead of just taking Douglas. But I, in my mind, I think that's a fair price. And the value proposition is good for the city.
I don't agree with making every road as fast as they can. Why wouldn't we want people to slow down and drive and stop at a business, for example? I mean, we don't want to be just the city that, because we have good roads, that people pass through.
Well, I think the argument is, there is an argument that if you have less traffic, people will avoid your commercial areas altogether, right? So it's like, oh, well, people are traveling through, so they'll stop for a loaf of bread at Olmsted's, whereas if they got on a different road, then they wouldn't. I don't know how much that argument actually holds.
But, like, on 42, like, I live in Crystal for 7 years. I don't even honestly know all the businesses on 42 because I can't look at businesses like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're just focusing on everybody going every which way. So, you know, there's a thing too, like, does anybody even know what businesses are on there? Has anybody, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Well, one of these, there's a conflict, especially when it comes to streets and roads, highways, because you have the city goals. And you have the county, you know, county road goals for transportation are different. And then you have the state level, which is, you know, their number one goal is point A to point B as quickly as possible and efficient. Safety even isn't even the top priority for state highways. So that is the, you know, the city, we have different goals than the county for, and we have several county roads that are major roads. In one of the other conflicts is if you do lose by making it one way or the other, you can impact the amount of volume of traffic. If it takes me, you know, currently 5 minutes to get to that business, but then they change the, you know, whoever has the jurisdiction changes it, now it's going to take 10 minutes. Well, it only takes me 7 minutes to go to this other one, even though it used to take longer. So you actually have less people going there, going through it. When I was in Bayport, they had St. Croix Crossing. I mean, you can get across the river and well in Wisconsin very quickly. The town of Holton and Richmond are all like, you might notice them, but you just drive by. I mean, businesses went out of business because they were bypassed. I mean, and that's an extreme example, but that's always, you know, either way, if you make it so you can't drive there very quickly, fewer people are going to bother going. So that's just one of the conflicts that we're always trying to juggle.
Did that affect downtown Stillwater much?
Yeah. Now, they Stillwater kind of jumped in head first, though, and Stillwater. But they kind of took advantage of it and did do a bunch of things to try to keep people there. But that first year, almost 2 years, a lot of the businesses were, now people don't have to go through there. Oh, hey, look at that. When traffic's backed up and they have time to actually notice all these businesses, or let's just stop. So now, yeah, people just go through before they had to, you know, or go by. Now they just, so it you can use it to your advantage if you have the means and have the Stillwater is a pretty unique location, but you just have to be careful doing any of those types of changes. Doesn't mean you shouldn't or can't do them. But these are some of the factors. And again, you talk to any engineer, as you all know, they're always going to start with how do I get, you know, as quickly as possible, one point A. So that's something that with the new public works director and engineer, you know, we're going to, you and I are going to, I already told them, one of the top priorities is traffic safety. We need to look at that because, you know, the last, you know, our works director made several changes, and it's something that the council wants to
revisit.
So that is, you know, on the docket. What that ultimately will look like, we'll have to have a conversation. But
and one just point on what you said there, I think even within the county, there's conflicting goals as well when it comes to roads. I think, for example, you know, 42nd is slated to be a bikeway in their long-term bike plan. I think if you talk to anyone in their actual engineering department, they would say, well, that's just the planners, you know. And so I think there's a lot of conflict when it comes to how best to use your roads and setting. And that's why I think setting some goals could be helpful to help guide us.
I don't think we're trying to increase speeds through Crystal. I don't think we're trying to create any highways through Crystal. I think it's preserving some of the ability to move around. I don't think it's anything dramatically big.
Well, and one of the, you know, one of the other priorities is safe neighborhoods, I would imagine, traffic and streets are part of that. In regards to the, like just with 42nd, as far as business goals,
Well, a couple things just to finish up. For me, I liked what Forrest said, like our meeting when we were talking about the lows, and like just thinking big, even if it's maybe never going to happen. Like it'd be great to change 42nd to, you know, put all the power lines down. Or I was thinking like Broadway too, because in my eyes they're dated, they're ugly. It'd be nice to make them prettier in some way, but you know, that's a lot of money. How does that happen? I don't know. You know, that's like big picture, like 20, 30, 40 years from now. But I think talking about that is important, and like setting that as like a long, long-term goal or something. That'd be really nice, you know, and maybe it never, ever happens, but it's really, at least something to bring up and talk about because, you know, they were designed, you know, 50 years ago and roads have changed, the businesses have changed, and be nice to, there's like updated, there's more urban planning, I guess, with roads since then. So just thinking way long term, you know, like pie in the sky, eventually maybe we can get there, kind of things like that for 42nd and Broadway specifically, like, or Broadway, I'm thinking like north of the railroad, like up to Bass Lake. It's kind of my thought for Bass Lake or for Broadway there.
You know, our EDA, we don't max out our EDA very much, not on a percentage basis. If we were to be a little bit more aggressive in the EDA, it's not a lot of dollars. And if we could put a line item in there under that category and just start putting something in there, you know, as a placeholder to start, and then as we go along, just a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, kind of like what we do with parks. And that's, you know, we're funding something that actually could be a reality, you know, say 10 years down the line.
Yeah, I think. Oh, sorry to hear.
Yeah. So, I do not like thriving business community as a priority, because everything we're talking about isn't actually about how I'm interpreting it, like actual businesses. It's more about like community development, or like, I don't know what the word is, but like, it's our roads, it's our sidewalks, it's how we connect things, it's how we maybe beautify our city holistically. I like putting these power lines down. Like, to me, I don't equate that to thriving business community. I think of more, again, I don't know what the word is, but
infrastructure,
beautification. Yeah. And I love that. And like, I love the conversation. I just want to like put it in the right category, or like name it the right thing, so that we can start like developing a long-term plan, and I would love for us to have a robust 25-year plan. And I actually would love to see if we have some kind of consultant or something like help us think about what could 42nd look like? What could these different pockets in our city look like so we can start, like we have with the Parks Master Plan, just an idea of what we could start, you know, saving for or investing in over the next several decades. So I love like what we're talking about. Let's name it something else. And like, I think there's a lot of energy around this. Like, how do we actually start to map out what these things could look like over the next few decades?
And I do think that we don't even need to hire anybody for at least the short term, because the county has lots of great plans. They just don't have any money to do them. I think example would be like, I mean, think about Douglas and the impact it has on our city, right? It runs like through 80% of the city. I don't really know, but it runs through. It's like the spine of the city, right? And the county has some really interesting plans for it in terms of multi-use off-road trails, improvements related to that. And I think if we were to partner with the county, partner with Three, because Three Rivers is also interested in that.
Isn't that already in the works? I
think it's separate. So the Three Rivers Trail that they're going to like totally like take the lead on, that's the one that's going to go through New Hope and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one on Douglas is one that they want to support, but Hennepin County has to take the lead on it. But they'd like to support it to make a big loop with their trail. So it'd be a regional trail, but not administered by Three Rivers. But ultimately Three Rivers is like, well, county might, you know,
it's kind of, no.
But I think that could be a place. Because when I think of Douglas, I'm just like, that can have such an impact. Mm-hmm.
Just to take on that, when I'm in other neighborhoods, more, you know, western suburbs of, I see people out walking, and you know, it's I just don't see that as much in Crystal. I kind of feel like, you know, I maybe once in a while I see somebody walking their dog, but I just don't see, you know, like couples out walking or families out walking, whatever. And walking is just an integral part of, you know, good health. You know, it's part of it. You know, when we talk about the healthy community or whatever, I mean, giving people access to go someplace where they don't have to worry about, you know, crossing, you know, busy streets or being walking on busy streets where people are going by them at, you know, very fast speeds. I think that we need to be able to provide some type of, you know, service like that to our community. And I think, you know, again, it goes to what, you know, Taji's talking about is like, you know, just the health of the community as a whole, you know. So, I mean, you know, we could figure out how we could make that happen. And again, it probably goes back to Hennepin County and their plans. But I just, you know, it's one thing that I've noticed a lot in other cities that we don't have, you know.
I will just one point. I know the Forest neighborhood walks a lot. Like, we, like, lots of people walking all the time. Like, I'll see more people out than vehicles. But I think it kind of goes to a little bit of maybe some of the compartmentalization of our city, right? So it's like, you know, over where you are,
yeah,
very narrow, you're totally boxed in with, and so it's not a very attractive place to walk.
Plus the sidewalks, or like there's a sidewalk on this side, and then it jumps over, there's a sidewalk on this side for a while, and then it jumps back across. And even my daughter says that, like when she walks down to Target, like the way the roads are, they're at angles, and so drivers don't look at who's on the sidewalk at all. They just look to see if it, you know, there's an opening in traffic, and then they just go.
Yeah.
She said there's been a few times where she's been almost hit because the driver's not paying attention. So, I mean, those are some aspects that I think is maybe if there's a better way in which the you know, sidewalk or trail comes to the intersection,
mm-hmm.
you know, little things like that, so that the driver's aware that there's someone on the trail, that people might use those trails more often. But I think, you know, like, again, you know, coming from Robbinsdale into Crystal, I see people walking up and down West Broadway. And this goes, again, to the county not improving West Broadway to the point where it is walkable. You see people that are, you know, basically right next to traffic, and it's, you know.
Yeah, function on their shoulder.
Yeah, yep. And it's not a good
thing. I bike there all the time. And
yeah.
It's
so
pain.
Yeah,
definitely some improvements there.
An awful lot of walking everywhere.
I see a lot of rappers, but you know, about cards.
Yeah, we don't have that isolation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of it is the connectivity, right? So it's like a lot of people walk around my neighborhood because it's fairly safe area to walk in from 42nd all the way up to the train tracks. But you don't see a lot. Nobody really crosses Douglas. Nobody really crosses 42nd. You know, it's very much like we have a big enough area of safety, safe areas to walk. So people feel comfortable mostly with their kids, you know.
Yeah. Are they on the streets or sidewalks or
No, so the just the municipal state aid roads have
sidewalks. So they're
like Hampshire, which is good because those are the streets that you have higher speeds on.
So I think it's important when we get into the light rail conversation and we're trying to establish with Hennepin County, if we're gonna take back that county road, that you're giving something that's been updated to current standards. When you walk from on Broadway, let's say from Robbinsdale to Brooklyn, is that park there? Brooklyn Park. It's all over the board. You're walking on shoulders, sidewalks are flipping. It's really interesting when you get to the other side of Bass Lake Road. I've seen handicapped people rolling on.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They can't go across the street to find the sidewalk. So it is a mess. I think it's important for us to say, hey, look, this needs to be improved. If we do take back that space, they're not improving that whole area. We're going to have a pretty healthy price tag to make that really passable.
And one thing, just to go back to Tashi's point about like where this fits. I think this fits almost everywhere, right? It's a safety issue. It's a beautification issue. This fits like our streets and roads and highways are really like the base of the city, right? It's how the city was built out, and it's so hard to even put it in a bucket.
Mm-hmm. So talking about kind of the long term of the business areas. Is it one business owner that owns that whole strip off Bass Lake?
No.
It's different owners like where the Michikana and...
Each one of those are actually separate personally. They're,
the majority of them. The
majority is owned by Dennis.
So is there any way, without like overstepping, as the long-term goal, if the businesses are sold or some... I don't know how you would do this, but make certain requirements to how the front would look or to what you would do. So then we could kind of at least start something in making that whole area. Because I view that more as our downtown, or I don't know, that just kind of seems like
that. Definitely.
You know what I mean? So if we could somehow put something so that we could start to make it.
The short answer is yes, you can put design standards in. The problem is because they've already been built,
right?
You pretty much can't apply those. You could try to incentivize them by, you know, any new construction has to do this, but
existing ones. We've done that with the zoning. We've brought in a lot of the zoning that the light rail group people wanted us to bring in. That is designed to be a town center. And that particular space it's going to attract at least interested parties who want to buy and redevelop that.
Yeah, because really there's like, you could put apartments. I mean, there's just such a lost potential, I feel, there.
So, were you talking about some of the signage? Or are you talking like about the facade itself?
Right, like it'd be so nice to have like layers and have apartments on
top. Oh, you mean the whole structure.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We own the parking lot.
That's right.
That's easy.
And if the city were to do something like that, you could potentially, you wouldn't really have an impact on the business there now or properties, but you could potentially spur redevelopment in that if someone else views that as a great site, they would potentially contact current owners, but then. That's always, that goes back to the, you know, the how
Right. How overbearing?
Well, not just overbearing, but you've got, you know, even it sounds like the what I've been told, dentist company, you know, there have been options, but right now he has tenants. If he does these improvements, or if any business owner does improvements, they're justifying higher rent. And you've got, you know, especially given a lot of the tenants in a lot of our businesses, which is a great thing. We have a very diverse, a lot of them are first time, you know, not necessarily, you know, they're maybe first generation, you know, citizens. So that has a potential consequence in doing that. I mean, that's just part of the reality. But that's something, you know, staff has talked about since I got here, of that it's such a prime location. And
I mean, I just feel like if you could do something there, that would do so much with the look of the city, just that segment. If you could just make it, I don't know.
I honestly don't think that strip mall is that bad when you compare it to like the liquor warehouse right next door.
Right.
Kind of or the like whole, the, yeah. And then I something I heard multiple times from residents is part of it is just how everything is connected in the downtown is really, it's kind of poor planning back when it was done, right? You have just so many of these long structures that cut other structures and view lines off, and it's, you can't really walk anywhere and driving places is. And so I think that is, and I've been talking to John, you know, part of the hope is maybe when things get redeveloped, some of these big walls can be cut.
So. I mean, that's a very like 1070s.
Yeah, looking. Yeah. That'd be nice.
You know, everything's just one layer. It's just, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see what happens to the old Wells Fargo. You know what? Because yeah. That's a big block of land there. And
it's a big building too.
Yeah, it's huge. And what comes out of that whole transition will make a big difference. But I do think, you know, like, sorry, I know. Did you want to say something?
No, just like, right. There's another opportunity. Is that something that would be worthwhile to kind of help kickstart the long-term plan of what we want to do for the city? If we see an opportunity of new businesses coming in, it seems like it would be kind of a perfect.
Yeah. I mean, that area is zoned really well for development. Like the city has done a really good job making the town center as like, if you want to come here, like where are you, can do almost whatever you want to build economic density. It's really,
you know,
well.
When we did that, it was, you know, obviously it was for transit oriented development, but it brought in that freedom to do things more. And what we ended up doing was expanding it beyond that half mile, so it reached more of our retail district, and that became important to us because when we were talking about it. We're talking about retail spaces diminishing and those places needing to shift and pivot to deal with the market forces. And that's kind of what we're seeing in some of these, more of these retail spaces, is different uses coming. You saw a school come in, you're starting to see doctor's offices intermingle with these retails, all these different uses that traditionally weren't part of retail. And yeah, we wanted to give that, so to speak, to our commercial district so that we had those opportunities.
So I think deliberate. I think for me, when I think about thriving business and community, I think what I'm for and what I believe we have done is made it very easy to do business here, which was great. I don't know, personally, I don't know if there's much else we can do in the spirit of thriving business community. As I've said, I think there's a bigger thing here that we're talking about. And I feel like there's what we could be focusing on is more the infrastructure around the businesses. I don't know about design standards or whatever. But as we think about our streetscape and Forrest, you made a comment during one of our last meetings when we were talking about this coastal sign, you know?
Yeah.
And I was for the sign, and I think I'm still for the sign, but you were kind of like, man, what else could we do with that money? And I don't even have a framework of what we could do with it. But I think it got me thinking of when we think about our streetscape, sure, we have these planters, but like, what if we like fully redid some of our sidewalks and put trees in there and made it, you know, and like tried to more intentionally connect, you know, via sidewalks and things like that. Like, those are the kind of things that I'm interested in. All the things around our businesses. I personally don't want to put too much effort on businesses. I think at the end of the day, we've made it very easy to do business here. I think that the staff has done a brilliant job on that. Now let's kind of take the lead on, okay, where you're doing business is like a really beautiful place to do business. And I think in turn, like these places will want to match that and they'll, you know, update their signage or they'll, you know, take care of that. So, and then with that said, yeah, I am not in favor of facade grants. I don't like the idea of subsidizing private businesses. And I think we can do more, again, surrounding those businesses to beautify or whatever, versus having folks replace their windows as they've done in the past.
I also would like to look at revisiting the building height limitations. Right now we have 60 foot as a limit, maybe going to 100. And maybe
or all heights or residential
or commercial buildings or whatever, like apartment buildings, maybe condo. I like to should look at building condominiums because
that issue with the airport at all.
Well, it could be
in some place.
It could be. But like for instance, you know, the Target CVS is the busiest CVS in the state, right?
Really?
Oh my God. They sell more pills than anybody. And then but the idea is like, you know, condos, we have seniors who are, you know, transitioning out of their homes. You know, they probably don't want to be in senior living, but they want to have something that's obviously not as difficult upkeep or whatever. I think we should look at maybe exploring that market in terms of development would be a way of attracting other residents to, let's face it. I mean, the biggest business we got going on here in the city is home ownership. And we should probably look at other ways in which we could promote that within our city itself. And maybe, you know, going from 60 to 100 feet may be the way of doing it. So I don't know if the airport has a problem with it, but you never know. You unless you ask,
yeah.
and they take a look at it and go like, yeah, sure, it's fine. You know, because if it's out of the so-called, you know, flight paths to the runways, right, it should be okay. I mean, there's a cell phone tower that's by my house that's 100 feet tall. That didn't seem to be a big problem at all, right? You know, they don't have a problem with the cell phone tower that's up right there on the Bass Lake Road and in the County Road 81. So we should look at other ways of promoting more residents in our area. And,
I don't know if that's the right height or not. But
we want to go taller.
Well, building tall buildings is really difficult.
I went to Dallas on a light rail convention, and we saw all different phases of this higher density housing being built, and it was amazing to see how many 3-story and 4-story places they built. But the more recent ones were going a little higher, and it made sense to me. If you have that space in a fully developed place, why wouldn't you go higher? I mean, we dealt with it with Kavanaugh. We dealt with it with the apartment on Broadway that's being built, or I think it's built. And we said to them, why don't you go another story higher? We can do that. I said, yeah, your numbers will work better. I said, yes, they will. You know, so I think there's some advantage and some attraction to kind of try to sell, you know, hey, 4-level, 5-level. I know in the Kavanaugh, we had to deal with some of the shadowing of the building to make sure it didn't affect the residential because it was so close to residential areas. But they did. They added a story in for them to the feasibility of that project became, you know, a lot more attractive. And it went kind of home. It was awesome. So I don't know. A 4-story is not 60 feet. A 5-story probably is. You go much over that, you're talking about a different style of construction. Right. You're not talking about lumber, you're talking about high beams and metal and
it's that steel. Sort of
thing.
Yep.
So once you get to the steel thing, I think it's as close to 10 stories as you can in order to justify that change in cost and construction.
And there's a lot more infrastructure that has to go into the building.
Yeah, and that becomes an assessment thing. On the build. So, not a huge
They'll change the restoration.
But if somebody's ready for a business plan, it works.
Yeah. I got one more thing on business. I don't know a lot about this. The Treasury Financial Crime Enforcement Network is becoming mandatory reporting for all small businesses who are 5 million or less, or 20 million, I'm sorry, or 20 employees or less. And it's a very negative thing in terms of data harvesting and the fines, and you can actually do jail time if you don't have the one file, if you don't update. It's a criminal enforcement against small businesses, and to me it's just atrocious. If you don't report, if you don't update, you can go to prison for 2 years. It's dumb, and that's supposed to be at the end of this year for all small businesses, and we have a lot of small businesses like that in our community.
What was the Treasury Finance?
Treasury Finance Crime Enforcement Network, FinCEN. They call it FinCEN.
FinCEN?
FinCEN, Financial Crime Enforcement Network. I look at my own businesses. I've got a bunch of them that I'm going to have to report and start filing something that is probably more difficult than taxes in terms of.
So, what would you, or what are you proposing?
I don't know. I don't know if there's anything we can do from the city perspective to say, hey, this isn't.
Like through recreation, there's groups that use the community center to do, like, help the seizure do their taxes. There's things, you know, so there's. The city's not spending any money on it, but we brought people in and they used the space to do similar types of
education. Would be a great place to start because nobody knows what to do. Nobody knows how this is going to play out. I mean, if you start a new LLC, you got to report in 30 days, and that's in place today. And there's been no advertising, no communication, and yet all of a sudden you start a new business and you're a criminal. It's just dumb.
What do you have to report?
I'm not even sure.
Pretty sure it's different depending on the level of transaction. Similar to like how banks used to have to report any withdrawals, deposits over $10,000.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with it, but I've heard little clips.
They talk about money laundering and stuff like that.
Yeah, they've expanded it.
You know, they talk about trying to get a hold of money laundering. So if you're going to money launder and be in the business of money laundering, you got to make sure you're over 5 million so you're exempt. So you got to do a really good job of it. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, why are we, so to speak, targeting small businesses? And I don't know. I need education on it. I got the flashpoints and I don't like the flashpoints. So if you can kind of look into that.
Any other comments on what thriving business community means? I guess how would you define a thriving business community? Like, what is it? If years in the future, Crystal has a thriving business community, what does that mean?
Well, successful businesses that pay a lot of taxes.
Difference between different types of business,
right? I mean, because that could just be like a general mill style.
Yeah.
Do you know what the most paying businesses? Her location is in Crystal.
That's garden.
Yeah.
It's probably whatever most valuable financial case.
Yeah, well, why
it's the strip mall by the park, Becker Park.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because each one's an independent
Crystal. That's so where we make the most.
Yeah.
More than Target.
I would also say, like, low vacancy, you know, because people see that. You know, people, I still think it's like low vacancy because I see like Broadway Pizza still empty for years, but that's like, well, the only building that's empty, you know, and new businesses coming in, you know, it's great that like Dunkin's coming in, replace Dairy Queen, you know, that kind of thing.
To that point, I think in my mind, a thriving business community is somewhere where it's a destination. Obviously, but there's different mixes of businesses. So like on the retail side, it's like a destination, right? It's a place where people want to come from out of the area to spend their dollars, right? Because of the mix of businesses. It's a place where you can go shopping for clothes and then eat lunch and then have a beer and then sit by the fountain and just like hang out with your kids.
I would second just the destination part. It'd be nice to have more. I mean, not much we could do about it, but it'd be nice to have like places that people come to Crystal for, you know, like more Milton's, like kind of like that. But
yeah.
Yeah, place to hang out.
Yeah.
You could spend
day. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's not like this so much anymore, but originally when the relatively new development Golden Valley on 55 and when NECA was built with the fountain and everything, that was like a total destination place. Like people would go there, they'd get their bagel and burgers and hang out. Now it's not so much, but at one point it was. Like that's in my mind a great business development.
Good. Distillery in the old Mountain Mud location, Fine Wives and 42nd. Mm-hmm. That is owned by, there are seven siblings that all went together. They grew up in Crystal and they really wanted to open their business in Crystal. And what they, when Randy and I were in there when I was just talking to the owner, and she said, and this was before I really knew anything, wasn't on the council, when this was going on. And she said, the city of Crystal just wouldn't work with us. I thought, how terrible. You have this family that specifically wants to open up in Crystal, and they were looking at two different sites at 36 and Douglas, which would have been perfect because when Milton's open, you know, you'd go on a Saturday night and it'd be an hour and a half wait for a table. So why not go across the street and have a drink somewhere else and come back when your table's ready? And that would turn that area into a destination. I mean, I'm really glad to see the pizza gone, but I was thinking, why not have that? You know, we're two restaurants there. So Milton's is too long of a wait. You go to the one across the street.
So now you understand why we had that as a priority.
Yeah. Anyway,
it just tells the story.
I wonder what the parking minimums, maybe. Because that pizza hut, that was part of what John was saying. It's like, it's a really hard place to have anything where people are going to spend more than 20 minutes at is the parking.
But they were looking at this. It's now a haircutting place across the street on the south end of that strip mall. And it was a liquor store at one time. And
the bottle shop was across the street there.
And yeah. There was a tobacco place
or something like that. Yeah.
And then I said, well, did you think of the aquatropics? And he goes, oh, that place was just such a mess inside. It would have been way too expensive.
Yeah.
And now it's different. Aquatropics was empty for, I don't know, 5 years. Longer than that?
Yeah. Can we do something in that intersection with paint to try to make it more pedestrian friendly?
Yeah, to signal to drivers,
that there's people
at 36 and
36 and Douglas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of treacherous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of like New Hope does with some of their medians and just kind of signal.
And that will help promote that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hill makes it tough.
But... Well, that's part of the more reason.
Yeah,
that is
a pretty dangerous
intersection.
No, that's
a bad one.
On that same vein, I'm really appreciating the walk light on 32nd.
That's, yes, mm-hmm.
That's a big improvement there.
Yes, agreed.
Well, it was nice hearing the wine thief say how nice it was working with the city of Crystal in comparison to their other
stores.
Has it always been there?
Yeah, since I've started, I have not seen a lot of the city even having to say no. Now, I don't know, you and I have had the conversation of reputations can precede you for a community, so they don't bother. Mm-hmm. But I haven't witnessed that where I've had a question like, why are we saying no to this or what? So maybe I continue to have an attitude.
Yeah.
Any other last things on the business community?
One thing that the one pie in the sky kind of thing that would be amazing is I think as a lot of corporate campuses are starting to downsize, man, wouldn't it be great if we had a development that attracted like, you know, a downsizing tenant or a downsizing, you know, corporate headquarters. I mean, there's so many corporate headquarters in the Twin Cities that are downsizing. Like, we don't really have a place now, but
Wells Fargo would be decent if you didn't have, you know, if you had people working there once or twice a week. But you know.
Sounds like airport to me.
Yep.
You read my mind. I'm like,
third year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, honestly though, like maybe now that we put that up there, or, I don't know. Is that a channel job? Yeah.
Do we have like a time frame for what these priorities, like is this a strategic priority for this year?
5 years.
5 years?
Well,
whatever.
We'll need to come back with, you know, refined version of this. And what I'm hearing, you know, this is kind of a mix. There's someone here that are much more long term. But I think most of these are, majority of them are, you know, within, I mean, all of them can be started now as we approach. And this is part of why I want to have this. As we're talking about streets, trails, you know, businesses, for, because there are going to be things happening in the next decade that we need to start planning now. So when we get there, we know where to head. That's, I don't want to wait until, you know, 6 years from now, hey, we should have done this differently because we wanted this, but now we're the trajectory.
Yeah.
So the actual strategic plan is going to be a more formal where here are the initiatives that, you know, the work plans that staff's going to come back with.
Yeah.
To, these are kind of the vision of where we want to be on term. So again, far out, looking out, and then we're going to, I'm going to come back and meet with staff and come up with ideas as to what else can we do? How can we, what can we do in these areas to achieve these goals?
Okay.
So these are somewhat more of the goals, long-term to where we want to go. So,
okay.
And this is obviously, it's, you know, 8:37 and
yes,
we're really just scratching the surface of
yes,
these types of conversations. So this will be an ongoing thing, but I want to get started now.
Yes. So a couple thoughts for me. I think we do have a thriving business community. And so I personally don't know if thriving business community should be a priority. As I will reiterate, I think we should name this something else. Some of the language in the Minnetonka strategic profile could be language we could use around livable and well-planned development. We could use the word infrastructure just to capture the ideas that we're talking about. So yeah, those are my thoughts.
Why don't you get rid of the word business and just have thriving community? I mean, because it's kind of like encompassing of everything, right?
I think, yes, I don't disagree. I think it could be more specific.
More specific.
Can we ask some corporates under business?
Yes, I mean, and that's what some is that they, you know, again, they you know, especially done their bringing, so yeah, they do this, spend a lot of time on it. Not that you have to, but yeah, it's been refined over time and a lot of time put into it. This is really, where do we want to go? Like,
yeah,
what's, so we can get to that, but that is something to keep in mind. That, and that's, yeah, part of why I don't, you know, because I wasn't part of creating these. What do these actually mean? So
yeah,
that's, we can, the council can do whatever it wants.
Yeah,
I'm not recommending we scrap the priorities and mission for the rest.
Yes, and nor am I. This is probably one I maybe have most issue with, but I think it was established for good reasons, and I think the council and city has accomplished why this priority was established, so I appreciate that. But also, when I look at the number of other cities that I looked at in preparation for this, not many specifically call out their business community. It's much more, but Minnetonka does not specifically call out their business community. Newport is not specific. So because I think part of it is like, we don't have a ton of influence on our business community. We have a lot of influence on the surrounding stuff for our business community. So I just want to make sure, like, whatever our priorities are, there's enough for us to really dig into. And there's a ton here. Again, I just don't think business community, thriving business community, is the right language.
Is,
as I've said for like five times. So we can like move on from that.
Do we have agreement from the council that this, because Mayor, what you described, things needed to change. Things needed to be addressed.
form or fashion that they were, is we can have more than four priorities. You know, if everything is prioritized, then that doesn't work. But if we want to refine our, because we also have our, you know, well, that is also related to businesses. Can expand extending. So is the council interested, and we're not going to solve it tonight, but looking at refining our actual priorities to where we're at now. A thriving business community is important, but is that one of our top four priorities, strategic priorities?
I think it's more of what I think these are values, whereas what I think I'm kind of with Taji, where what we want is more like strategic priorities to guide action, right? And, you know, values are important, but it's not necessarily going to lead to an action, right? I think we probably all agree that we value a thriving business community in the city, but maybe there's not a specific action right now because, you know, we did a ton of work at, like doing the town center development zoning work. We did code kind of review. And, like, we've done a lot. So maybe that's not something that's really important for a strategic action right now, but we should I think we should keep it as a value because who knows where we'll be in 5 years. I think it's important for us to note that this is a value that's important. Actually, we hoped that was value. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have like three-ish values or strategies or whatever with like a couple, you know, if it was a thriving community and then business and whatever, you know, have kind of the main headlines under the three main ones or how, I don't know.
I think we need to get through a couple more of these. And then we can wrap back around and say, okay, this is what I think we should really do.
Yeah.
But let's just kind of keep going. Obviously, we're not going to go get, I don't think we're going to get through all of them tonight.
What?
So we'll have to reconvene.
We'll have to do one of them.
Which is great. That means the discussion is robust. Yes.
Can we get a rapid fire round or whatever? Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry, next. What's that? Yeah. The
hey, you went over.
Strong neighborhoods. Was really an outpouring of who we are in Crystal. We're primarily residents and we're primarily neighborhoods. The design was to be closer. As a community at large and closer within our own blocks where we live. And we're trying to create different things that would, I guess, bring your own neighborhood together as well as bringing the different neighborhoods together. I guess I'll refer to the community outreach task force. They did a couple of things in that realm. One was the Crystal Ball. It wasn't well attended, but the mission was designed to bring the neighborhoods in. And then we also, what also came out of that was the neighbors recognizing neighbors program. And it was really cool in that period of time. There were, it was before things started really socially kind of getting a little bit flared up. And we had instances that were flaring, but not as big as they got, right? In the evening news, we had a report about, okay, this community is going through this. And on the other hand, complete opposite in Crystal, they're having this thing and it's designed to bring everybody together. And it was really kind of a cool thing. And even though it's not something that was successful and carried forward, I think there's room for something to kind of figure out a way to continue that. Crystal Frolics is its own entity. We are taking a bigger role as a city in Crystal Frolics than we've ever taken because we're kind of taking over the programming for Becker Park. And that gives us the opportunity to do things just a little bit more proactively than what we've done, as opposed to just letting civic organizations do whatever they want. They do whatever they want and welcome for the most part. And I don't mean to be so rough about that, because it's really not that rough, because they do have guidelines. They do have different standards from the cities that they have to meet. But we do have opportunity in that programming to, I would say, go a little bit further and try to create that cohesiveness in our neighborhoods. We've named our neighborhoods. Not all communities do that. We have very different neighborhoods. We all live in very different neighborhoods. I mean, my neighborhood's very different than John's, and you know, we've got pluses and minuses and all of the above.
We rule. Sorry.
you have very quick access to get where you need to go.
Yeah. We break a few laws.
We don't, of course. But it's the concept of that small town feel we wanted to try to capture. And we still do, I think, to where you know the person across the street, you know the person next to you. We have Night to Unite. We still bring that up and focus on that. And that should not go away. It should be promoted very strongly. And honestly, the diversity I've seen change in the 25 years I've been doing Night to Unite is amazing. It's just amazing to see the communities, how they've changed, how they're younger now. Started out just with kind of a one neighborhood back here on like 40th and Edgewood in that area. We showed up to a Night to Unite, and it was like, kids everywhere, where did they come from? You know, and then the next year there's like, oh my gosh, we went to two parties that were had kids everywhere. Now there's kids everywhere, you know. So it's really fun to see that change and the diversity of all these communities coming together and really getting to know each other. Strong neighborhoods, I think if we have that identity, as strife occurs or may hit in our community, it's going to be less destructive, because we know who each other are, we know who our neighbors are, we care for them, we love them, we do what we do, and that's the whole concept.
And that points to the strong neighborhoods, the promotion of the neighborhoods.
Yeah, they do an excellent job.
Yeah.
Our police department's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I think is really important for a lot of the reasons Jim said, but it's something that I really care about, because there's so much research, and you don't even need research, it just makes common sense, that beyond just like when there's strife, but when there's disaster, the resilient communities are the communities that are cohesive, right? I mean, that was shown really true in Katrina. There's been a lot of research about it, but the neighborhoods that were tight and knew each other, those were the ones that had better health outcomes, had better economic outcomes long term. And so I think, you know, we used to do a lot specifically around safety in neighborhood cohesion. Like, you know, you think about the old block captains and neighborhood watch and like that kind of thing. It seems like it's fallen out of fashion. But this, you know, obviously it'd be great if every neighborhood just organically, ooh, wow, there's somebody here who's going to organize the neighborhood a little bit and get people together. But I think a lot of neighborhoods don't have that. And that's where the city can come in and maybe help empower that, right? So saying, hey, like, this is something that's important. And maybe like you're interested in this, but you just don't quite have the right tools. You know, here's, you can, I don't really know, but like, you know, here's a packet of information about mm-hmm. how to host a neighborhood. Because this is kind of what the block happens used to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there's a stigma around that. So maybe call it something else or whatever. But the idea is still really solid. Empowering people within their neighborhoods to get their neighbors together so that people know each other. And I think Night to Unite is a really good event. That being said, I think there's a lot of gaps in our community when it comes to 19 night. I mean, I live in a pocket where we don't have a block party. When I first moved here, there was a block party, but it was like right over me. So like, I luckily knew my neighbor, so my neighbor invited me, but I knew the people across the street and they didn't know that neighbor, so they didn't get invited. And so it's just, and that's the nice thing about 19 night, is on the street, everyone's invited. Mm-hmm. And so I think trying to maybe restart that, just to really, we've had a lot of new people move into Crystal, empowering those new people to say, hey, this is something you care about. Like, here's the tools, here's how to do it, offering support to make that happen, whether that's just something like, you know, public works dropping off phones and whatnot, or if it's a police officer coming with the canine unit to have something to do, or whatever it is. I think that that's something I'd really like to see.
I think right on. I think there's more we can do. I mean, we as council members, we go along and we take along with police and fire. We don't have the lights and we don't have the uniform. But what do we have? You know, we have ourselves to present. It might be nice to have kind of like, okay, this is what we're hoping will happen. You know, kind of lay out a plan. In my community, and we don't have to say it that way, but this is a great opportunity for you to create a calling list within your neighborhood. So you know if that house has left their garage open and it's, you come home like at 12:30 and you know they left it open, you can text them, you can call them, whatever. It's really nice to have the ability to actually know their name. I mean, you can go back to the list. Okay, what's that guy's name again? Go there, you know, as people like me, you know. and then you go, you have that reference. It might be a fun thing for us to have a couple things that we can say that we want to try to promote that type of cohesiveness. You're spot on disaster. We had that calling list in place before the disaster. We had in our neighborhood probably five people connect to our generator. This was in 2013. We had a storm where we were up power for
six days,
depending on where you were.
Yeah,
certain.
And
the whole city.
And we were,
yeah,
just going from freezer to freezer, you know, yeah. It was just really kind of a unique time where people were just really helping people.
Yeah. Big storm went through. Was that the tornado that went through and landed on Minneapolis?
Yeah.
And then right now.
Yeah, 2013 was that.
Yeah.
It spent
three so went right down Penn Avenue.
Solid days.
And it just like to go.
You know, I mean, like, where is
power? The whole West Metro.
It knocked trees over, you know, so there's quite a few main lines of electricity that go through the city, and so if any of those are cut or whatever, then basically you have blackouts everywhere.
I often say to people, like, you don't have to be best friends with your neighbors, but
get cookies for everybody.
Sorry, Rob.
Wow, thank you.
You're
here.
Yes, holding on to us, huh?
But we're all better off if we know each other.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just that 19
is
only one night a year. We
need
something else to promote.
That's a talking point. You guys, you can meet more than one night a year. And maybe there are, well, I won't say many, but I know there's a couple of them that eventually can't do that. They'll meet times a year.
That's awesome.
Yeah, years ago, there was a neighbor across the park from me, so across 32nd, who tried, we all met at Valley Place Park, and he tried to, you know, exchange a calling with what it had to do with a lot of kids that lived in Crystal Village would come down and play basketball, and it was racist. It just, to Randy and me, it felt very racist. And that was what the guy was, he didn't say it that way, but it felt that way. I'm like, that's not what we want to do. We don't want to get together and exchange numbers to keep the black kid from playing basketball in the park. I mean, that's how it felt to me. But that was a long time ago. That was, at least 10 years ago. That's the only time I've been involved with people exchanging numbers like that. Too bad. It is too bad because if we all know each other, we're just safe. And we're all better off. And just like, yeah, why is their garage door open? That's odd. Yeah. Or why is, you know, their dog's out or whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Especially with, as we have younger, you know, I think, you know, we have some younger people on the council, and then there's younger people moving to Crystal, and then there's people that are retiring in their homes too, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's having that connection, I think, is really important as we look at the makeup of our community, right? It's like having somebody to check in on people and ask, you know, when somebody needs help. Yeah. Nice having me.
Yeah. Yeah, like I think I mentioned this in one council meeting. What I worry about, I think society's getting a little more like in your house more. Yeah. It'd be nice to promote more neighborhood. Like 19 nights awesome. It's like one of my favorite nights of the year because you get to know your neighbors, but really promote that and maybe try to get more of those going. And like I would love to organize my own, but you know, it's nice to go bounce around too. So just promoting that, trying to get more people involved somehow, like really encouraging people some way. Just to get more people out. I just think for the strong neighborhoods, I think the city's done a really good job with that. The names are good. Neighbors recognizing neighbors is good. But just finding more ways to get people like other houses and meeting each other would be great. Thanks, be nice and awesome way. But just keep thinking about that, where people are less inclined to go outside, I think. Maybe they were 10 years ago.
One just small thing. The neighbors recognizing neighbors probably needs a little retooling that came up with for commission. Mm-hmm. They only got 4 submissions. Yeah. And they were all kind of fiddling. They felt so some
I think so we did last year too.
Yeah, well, normally they recognize 5.
Last year
it was 6. Yeah. And so they just like, oh, like, what a coming different.
My next door neighbor, I think 3 years in a row, never got picked. No, she's moved. Boulder Valley.
Biggest insult.
Well, she moved into a senior housing.
We talk after the park commission.
Oh, okay.
Board decision. Staff's been talking about how else can we add to this to, that was one of the issues is. Yeah, people give it up, like, if they nominate. Because back when we were getting 20 nominations, and we were only doing 3 awards. Well, if you're 4 or 5 or 6, and you don't get picked that year.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the whole thing as to how to, and we know there's communities, parts of the community, that aren't, it's not going to rate them. So that's something else that we're looking at.
So again, that can be one of the talking points. We do Night to Unite, but we do a citywide frolics thing, and we do our immediate neighborhood couple blocks. We don't have a neighborhood event. Why don't we do a neighborhood or give some thought to what a neighborhood event might look in this specific park, or whatever that neighborhood is.
Great idea.
I don't know what that would look like, but we can bring in some of these same talking points. We can bring some of the things that are priorities and just promote. Because they already do that.
Yeah, they were doing renovation.
I totally agree with that.
I was at the park and rec meeting last year. I was at Becker Park.
Yeah.
And there was literally no one. I shouldn't say there's one family.
We were all, some of us were there.
Yeah.
I was incredibly disappointed. And I sent an email to you and John because, that we should have. Dozens, if not 100+ people at that thing because of how dense that place is. Yeah. There's a few hundred people at the park, but no one's at our, Parks and Rec meeting in that neighborhood. And so I'm just doubling down on what we're saying. Can we invite a food truck or can we make it kind of a thing, for these different neighborhoods? I love that.
Make it more about the mingle. Yeah.
And then
also, are you also saying that How are you going to be able to track someone from that neighborhood to see in the park commission? Are you also saying that too?
Not necessarily, but I think that's inevitable if they show up to those.
Well, that's events. Part of it too. All civic engagement. Get that through having a sense of community.
Doubling down on Night to Unite, I think that's awesome. I think there's some more tactical things we could do. Maybe we promote it more. We have a targeted number of parties, and to encourage more people, and also to make it more accessible for hosts. Yeah. Could we offer, $100 grant if you're a host to
cover the cost of those?
Yeah, some of the few things you have to do. So I would like to explore something like that. But anyways, I echo what everyone's been saying on this one.
Well, could you do something with each neighborhood, some sort of thing where the communities. Like a mini beautification thing where people kind of come together, whether that be just plant thing, what does plant?
All of make it a community service thing.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, from each neighborhood with maybe some city money.
For which?
For like each neighborhood.
So like when we have the neighborhood events, there's a component of it is a civic, a community service thing. Like maybe it's planting flowers at the park or picking up trash or.
There are some neighborhoods will decorate like their park signs.
Yeah.
Flowers and mm-hmm. things. But the city hasn't. We just said, have at it, you know, go.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We haven't been done anything proactively or like purged it. They wanted to beautify their own thing and it's kind of self-policed it. I guess what other types of things are you thinking of? Would it be just the parks or are you thinking?
I mean, I don't know if, you know, it, like I don't know off the top of my head, but like the, where they redid off of 36 and 100 there, they've got that, the median or whatever, and there's like a few pants here and there, but it doesn't really look, do you know what I mean? I feel like it's maybe a missed opportunity. Like, I'm not even sure what neighborhood that would be, but like maybe that you could put something out and say, hey, ideas, this neighborhood, people,
Bassett Creek, right?
Maybe that's Bassett Creek. But you know, just having them come together as a neighborhood of, hey, what can we do here? Maybe have specific people from that neighborhood and then help implement it. I don't know, that's just an idea that
mm-hmm.
I thought of. I'm sure.
I think it's a great idea. Doing, I mean, community service is such a bonding activity.
And just so I'm clear, beautification of public spaces. And
yeah, that's in their neighborhoods.
Because what the, and I'll just put my mark, you know, sans, you know. They're always concerned about the maintenance. It's always, you know, the one time. So whatever we can come up with some ideas. I was just trying to. Top of my head, try to come up with something that is low maintenance. Because the one time when, okay, we've just built this beautiful thing or done this thing, and then, you know, months later, I do that to commit to keep it going. That's
right.
But that's not saying we can't.
Yeah. Kind of on that same vein as the rain gardens. The rain gardens were a big thing, you know, 15 years ago. And like the first two cycles or whatever, you know, city kind of like more or less maintain them, but expected the homeowner to take over after that. And you go around and you look at the rain gardens, there are maybe a handful that are maintained. The rest of them are just falling into disrepair, or like people have like planted them over with grass, you know, which is not the idea behind these rain gardens or whatever. So, I mean, that's kind of like this similar thing. Maybe that might be part of the, you know, part of the civic thing. I'm not sure, but
yeah, rain.
Yeah, it was a big deal. I mean,
yeah, can't be much worse. Like,
been on the enforcement side of that, where yeah. Even had agreements like, okay, do this rain garden, like you get the science agreement saying you'll perpetually maintain it, and it's never fun being the enforcement agency. It's like, or the new owner,
the new owner generally. But the issue is like,
know about this,
yeah,
that wasn't disclosed, but yeah. You know. Need to do something.
I don't want these weeds in front of my house, you know, whatever. Yes, right.
Yeah. Well, no, let's, let me talk to Zach about that.
I mean, it could just be a trash pickup, you know.
Well, we do have the sentence to serve, which is going around, and we did have, like, on Earth Day, we would, like, you know, communities would organize and go along and basically kind of do a big trash pickup through the neighborhood. I there's also things that we can do, like, you know, plastic bags last forever, you know, there's issues with that, styrofoam, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, that's all part of this, we're talking with HRG about, you know, doing something about our organics. I mean, the high is sky high on that in terms of what we can accomplish in terms of, you know, making our community more, you know, more viable and getting people engaged, you know. I mean, there's a thing that we used to do in the past we don't do now, but, you know.
Doesn't the EQC have a thing every Wednesday night at Bassett Creek Park.
EQC?
What's that?
Not anymore.
EQC?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. It's gone. Okay. It was a group that
Rachel brought it. She actually just we're working there to get the equipment that we got the grant
for. Oh, she was doing some buckthorn.
Oh, that's it. Okay. I thought you were doing
buckthorn. Yeah, that was the Oak Forest Savannah restoration. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are groups that are kind of just organically. They are doing good work, and maybe we should.
Well, I think that's part of it. Is if your neighborhood has a natural area that could be, you know, like the MAC up in Skyway or.
Has anybody seen Bassett Creek on the Hill? All the changes they made there.
Which part of it?
What are they doing over there? Are they putting fir trees?
It is. You can see all the way through the woods. The underbrush is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's a stark. Change. I don't know if it's good or bad.
Good. It's very good because those oaks do not do well with that type of understory.
So. Yeah.
Okay. One thing we need to have is we need to have a gigantic disc golf tournament.
Honestly, yes. Yes. In
Crystal, because we got Crystal and New Hope have some pretty fine disc golf.
You can qualify for New Hope one and the
yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And you better wear matching shoes. No, I mean but I mean there's ways in which you can promote this area and with other things other than
It's
amazing to see the space inside those woods now. You could literally put hold inside those woods.
Mm.
It's like it's changed the character of it immensely. Mm. So I don't know, maybe that's a possible rework at some point in time. But because there's, you know, just in my backyard, there's like 7 holes all in that field and that prairie area. Now, there might be some opportunity for some variety.
And you said your backyard, I thought you're building a small army there, but anyways.
It's maintenance free backyard.
Yeah, that's true.
Just dash the discs.
Yeah.
What's your appetite tonight?
I think we can call it after 2 because we know we're going to have to meet again.
Okay.
And then do 2 more.
When would you like to do this?
Whenever the schedule allows. So take a look at the schedule and.
Could we do a special work session too? I mean, I'd be open to it.
Yeah, it might be. A lot of these types of discussions and conversations are done as a separate, okay, everybody find a Saturday that can work and you put in a 4-hour on 2 breaks, but
yeah,
a dedicated, I mean,
so you're saying yes, a special work session.
I think a special work session would be appropriate for this.
Okay. I thought you were going to shoot it down.
A meeting that starts at 7 o'clock at night on a any Thursday is, or Tuesday, I mean, it's
tough. Yeah, and the attorney will meet us later, so. Yeah.
Sorry?
The attorney will too meet us later.
Well, that was a schedule.
Yeah, and then have these ahead of time too.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
These are helpful, but.
Okay. What other, to that point, what other, any other information? I look at a lot of different, like I said, we're not to that level yet of getting to this, but this is some good discussion. Yes. What do you guys want from need from me before the next discussion?
Well, I guess I would be curious to see what St. Louis Bark has and if they have something like this. They seem to be rather forward thinking in terms of their city. Lastly, I like this idea of this land lease businesses or whatever. I think it's an interesting opportunity. I would like to know if our community or development officer, if he, John Sutter, thinks that that's something that he can talk to, business owners around here, because we have a lot of parking. I think we have a lot of parking that, because of COVID and because people shop online, that it's never going to be used like it was 30 years ago. And I think, there's better opportunities for to create additional business opportunities in the city of Crystal, which is a great place to live and do business. So
Yeah, I think we have the ordinances changed to allow that sort of thing. It's just a matter of kind of promoting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we have reduced the required parking spaces for a lot of these businesses.
Because I think, isn't the
we don't have to decide that tonight, though. I mean, it's certainly, you know, we're kind of, and then lastly, I would really, if we're able to find enough people to put butts in chairs for all of our commissions that we have now, I would like to add another commission called Forestry Commission, which we look specifically at treescape here in Crystal in terms of improving it, saving it, preparing for the future. I don't know. But actually, instead of having a, you know, the foresters meet once a year, sorry, have them meet more on a more regular basis, maybe every 2 months or something like that, and actually try to put together a policy for our you know, our trees here in the city, because they're going to be under pressure as we go forward. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that there's going to be other infestations that are going to happen that are going to wipe out trees. I've been through Dutch elm, now emerald ash borer. I'm sure the next one is coming.
So it is. Asian longhorn maple.
There you go.
What kind of tree?
Anything with leaves, but it prefers maple.
Was it?
Oh.
That's something we'll take out the
package. You're thinking outside of the EQC, so an actual
outside upgrade. Yeah, because I think the EQC should look at our organics and trash and anything that goes with that, maybe even in terms of what do you call that? When you have heat that goes through or cooling that goes through your buildings or whatever.
HVAC?
I'm thinking more about that. You know, just in terms of efficiencies and stuff like that. Yeah, because there's organizations within Hennepin County that can come in and do an energy efficiency assessment for your whole city. I think the EQC can have a very specific purpose, but I think having them also do forestry would be way too much. I think forestry needs to have its own kind of niche commission, you know. Otherwise, those people, anybody who's on a forestry commission, if you start talking about trash or recycling, they're just not going to be there. They're just going to, you know, you're going to find them just bleeding off, going someplace else. So I think you need somebody who's dead set on making sure that people know that they need to water their trees during the, you know, hot summers and, you know, exactly when you can tell it, you know, your forest is under duress, you know. So
I'm just thinking about this. There's obviously going to be some, especially at the outset, a lot of work for the commission, but I'm
like a task force almost.
An ongoing task force, but I'm just thinking we probably have some people who may want to be on it. And I don't want to lose another.
Sure.
Question.
Yeah.
So that might be something that the council would want to.
Did you double dip the task force?
I'm task force.
Task force, you can, but the commission's.
Right.
You can.
Yeah.
So that might be something, because the task force also has a defined.
Right. Area. And I think with the forestry, there's like a tremendous amount of work. Like, we're definitely behind right now. And then the goal would be we get a kind of a more maintenance.
They're not going to be meeting every month to discuss much, yeah. But, you know, after they get up, after we get whatever programming we
probably quarterly or but you know,
they can cancel. I'm trying to think of.
I think they can be self-directing as they have work. They can increase the
frequency. Like you're planning. If there's nothing modifications.
Yeah. They don't mean. And then it could be the designated tree board too, right? The city gets to pick whatever that is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Okay. That's true.
Okay.
I have lots of thoughts about that, but that can be the news.
Yeah. I think we get enough bodies here to be able to cover, you know, more opportunities, you know, with commissions in the city here. So let's do it. I know it's hard for staff to find someone to do it, you know, but I just think there's enough here with us on the council, you know.
Yeah.
We have multiple commissions. Maybe that's fine.
Brad loves trees.
And he wants to spam me.
Yeah. He just does so much other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, it's just, without, and I'm not advocating for a forester, but we just want to make sure that we, you know, if he's got people to do the legwork, like,
commissioners?
Yes.
Then, or other experts that are willing to help, then can do more.
One of the foremost experts in tree health lives in Crystal. I forget what her name is, but she lives up in Canada.
Once upon a time.
The one we appointed.
No, no, that's not her.
I didn't, that wasn't on her resume when she was.
Yeah, there. No. So that was much more older person.
Can you tell us a little bit about the new city engineer? You hired somebody? Yes?
I did, yeah.
We know that much.
Yeah.
Was it just today?
Can I share it after?
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, motion to adjourn.
Yeah, okay.